G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, and this is episode 220, brought to you by our Patreon members community. Without the support of our patrons, you simply would not be hearing this podcast each and every week right around the world and the great stories about intermittent fasting. I'd really appreciate it if you do like the podcast and you want to support it and help it to keep going if you join our Patreon community. What's in it for you? Well, there's a lot, actually. We have two Zoom accountability meetings each month in the Northern and Southern Hemisphere. There's also a separate meeting for those that are looking to break free from sugar once a month. There's also bonus content, bonus podcasts, a lot of discussion topics, five-minute focuses, and always motivational things each and every week to your inbox directly from the Patreon community. So if you'd like to join us, come and see that link there in the show notes at www.patreon.com/thefastinghighway. If you are interested in my own story, you'll find that in my book, The Fasting Highway. You can get that in paperback and Kindle on Amazon. You can also get it in the audio version now on Spotify, Kobo, and many other audiobook platforms. Okay, folks, let's get on with today's podcast. I'm going to be speaking with Alison Preuss. And Alison lives in the northeast of Scotland. And Alison's had quite a few trials and tribulations with her weight, as you'll hear about in this podcast, and a lot of them will sound familiar to you. But I don't want to spoil the story any further. So here she is, all the way from Scotland, the amazing Alison Preuss. Oh, g'day, Alison, and welcome to the Fasting Highway. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Graham. It's lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you here, all the way from Scotland there, one of my favourite countries to visit on the planet. Absolutely stunning. But Alison, a lot of people around the world listening to this podcast, and let's just get some backstory on you and your health and sort of how you found your way to intermittent fasting in the first place.
Well, the short answer to how I found my way to intermittent fasting was through my son, who is an avid researcher of everything to do with health and well-being and all sorts. And probably about 2017, 2018, we kind of noticed him getting leaner and despite having a massive appetite. And we sort of said, what are you up to then, Dan? And he said, well, he said, I'm doing this intermittent fasting thing. So we asked him about it, and it sounded to me to be, you know, pretty good. And knowing that he'd read all the stuff that I didn't have to do to follow it up, I thought, right, I'll have a go at this. And although I'd already been familiar with Michael Mosley and, you know, the 5-2 and the Fast 500 living in the UK, I kind of hadn't really heard much about the 16-8, which was what Daniel was doing. So I thought, that sounds easy enough. So I'll jump into that and see how it goes. Now, this was back in probably October 2018. And I started on 16-8, which I found really easy because I had never eaten breakfast and just kind of went on to sort of not having milk in my coffee and then actually stopping eating earlier. And I found that really easy. So I soon sort of slipped into 19-5, which became the protocol that worked for me. Now, my mistake then was doing it for only 5 months because I thought, oh, this is great. I'm fine now. And, you know, I gradually let things slide, had a bit more milk in my coffee and things. And I'd said to Daniel, you know, it's OK. And he said, no, it's not actually OK. There's this thing called the Queen Fast. So I kind of gave up. And then, of course, we all got into the pandemic, and that was just just awful for everybody, obviously. So things just slipped a little, started drinking a bit more. And before I knew it, you know, things had sort of crept up again. But anyway, as for the backstory, I never really had any weight problems in my life or real health problems. I was actually pretty skinny as a kid. I did ballet, classical ballet, until my mid-teens. So I never really had cause to diet as such. And my weight never really changed at all. In the 80s, I had three kids. After the first two pregnancies, my weight just zapped back to what was about 9 stone, about mid 120 pounds, 125, 26 pounds. After I had my third, which is the fasting son, he was a massive baby. He was a 10 pound baby. And it took me a little while of mindful eating, I would say, not dieting, to get back into shape. And that was actually, that was fine. So I was kind of okay for many years. I'd maybe put on a bit of weight in my 40s and 50s. But the big sort of thing came for me when my husband died. It was a real, real shock to us all. I mean, it came out of the blue. And he was diagnosed and died within 5 months, which was really traumatic. But when he was diagnosed, I literally went into shock, I think, with the trauma. And I practically stopped eating. And I just literally, the weight just tumbled off me. It was a really difficult time. And by the time, I remember looking at pictures of me at his funeral, and I looked, frankly, emaciated. I looked terrible. So it took me a while to bounce back from that. I threw myself into other things like campaigning on education issues, which is one of my favourite things to do. And, you know, gradually I kind of returned to normal eating again. But it did, you know, once the pandemic came, you know, things really, really sort of got a little bit out of control. So I did feel that I was not at my best. I thought, right, I need to do something about this. And as I say, I had that first attempt, and it was a successful attempt in 2018-19. And then I thought, right, I need to do something. But at the back of my mind, this was going on. But then my daughter announced she was getting married, and she gave us 10 months notice of the wedding, which was in 2021, because they had delayed it due to COVID. So I thought, right, this is the catalyst. This is the why. This is why I need to do something, because I had a dress that I wanted to wear. It was a kind of family dress, a 1960s dress that I hadn't worn since the 80s. And I decided, right, this is what I'd like to wear to her wedding. So I thought, right, I started on the 11th of January, 2021. And on 16.8 and moved up to 19.5 again within a couple of weeks. I thought, right, clean fast, straight from the off, black coffee in the morning, won't start eating until lunchtime. And what I did was probably, rather than, it wasn't one meal a day, and it wasn't two meals a day, but it was one and a half meals a day. And I had maybe a snack to open about lunchtime, just to sort of see off the hunger pangs. And then I had a proper meal before my window closed, and I didn't really restrict anything. But what I did do for those 10 months was completely cut out alcohol. I had none at all, which was quite a big thing for me, because I rather like red wine. But I did that, and I started to feel better pretty quickly within a few weeks. And I think that was when the appetite correction kicked in. There was no doubt about that. There was definitely a shift, and there was a shift to sort of choosing much better foods that agreed with me, because I soon identified the ones that didn't. And I'm afraid carbs like rice and pasta were not great for me. I still eat them, but they don't make me feel the best. But that happened. So it kind of just went from there. And within, I think, 8 or 9 months, I fitted into the dress, and I'd well exceeded what I wanted to achieve. And after that, I kind of kept going, and I lost probably more weight, because I did weigh myself at that point, and I got down to 124 pounds after a year of fasting. So it worked out pretty well, and I've kept going. I didn't use it as just 5 months I'd done before. I decided this is a lifestyle now, and I'm not going to stop.
That's fantastic. And just, you know, I want to pause for a minute and honor the memory of your husband that you lost, and I'm sure he's looking down and super proud of you, and
must have been an awful time for you. And, you know, you mentioned the COVID pandemic, another awful time. So, you know, you've had a few stumbling blocks along the way too, but I wanted to delve back into the first round of IF, when you started, and it was successful for you, but it was more of a mindset. Do you think that you treated it like a diet, a short-term thing to fix a few problems? And then when you did that, you thought, okay, well, I'm all good. And you got complacent and you went back to just your normal sort of ways. Was that more sort of what I'm thinking?
Well, you usually ask about height and weight. Well, I can say that I'm 5'6", or at least I was. And I think I might have shrunk an inch or half an inch because you do as you get older. Now, I cannot actually tell you how much I weighed when I started fasting, because I don't know. I didn't start weighing myself until a good few weeks down the line, when there had already been some progress. But I reckon by the time I'd finished, I'd lost about 45 pounds. So I must have been in the sort of 165 to 268 range, I think. But what I did do, I didn't really weigh myself. Frankly, it was a bit depressing because I'd never, ever really in my life been above 140 before. So what I did was take photographs and take measurements. And I'd been on Gin's big Facebook group when it was still operating as a support network. And I actually went through lots of the posts and looked at lots of people's journeys and thought, right, that's very inspiring. This is what I'm going to do. And I took that advice and did kind of averages. And what I noticed quickly was that my waist measurements went down rapidly. And that was really quite encouraging. So I thought, I don't really need to bother about weight. As long as I can see things reducing, that's actually really good. So as I say, it took about 10 months to get to my daughter's wedding and to get to where I wanted to be. But I continued after that. It was a kind of a natural progression until I think things level off a bit. And possibly for me, I got a bit too low. By maybe February 22, I thought, no, you know, so I kind of switched up my window a little bit and did slightly less in the gym possibly. So I've got to a comfortable place where I've kind of remained for 2.5 years, which is really quite good. I've taken a few notes, so I'll just refer to a couple of them so that I don't forget things. But you were actually talking about the diet mentality and time that it takes to sort of get into fasting. Now, again, I mean, because I'm a long-term home educator who has done lots in that community, I actually do liken it to the period of de-schooling that a lot of children go through when they've maybe had problems in school and they come out and they kind of learn in a different way. Because like everything else, I mean, schooling is a one-size-fits-all solution to educating the masses. And I think the diet industry is kind of similar, and this may be controversial, but I think lots of children have this de-schooling period before they enter like an unschooling phase. And I really think you can compare it to fasting and living a healthy lifestyle, by which I mean so many people are bogged down by dieting, losing weight. I think there's a case for de-dieting and an undieting solution, which fasting is, so that people need to be educated that it's not about a diet and restricting things. It's about finding a way forward that suits your style of learning and making your mind, body and spirit healthier and more sort of you can achieve what you want to achieve in a different way, if you see what I mean. I don't know if that makes sense, but I thought about it a bit and I see many parallels with the work I've done in home education and fasting, and I kind of apply the same principles there. So I hope that makes some sort of sense.
It does make sense, and it makes a lot of sense actually, because you know, I think when we apply what knowledge of fasting and about why we're doing it as well, I mean, the whys are very important. That's what I think about fasting. I mean, obviously the science is there, but when you first started, you mentioned there your son gave you a clip about the clean fast, and he said, come on, Mum, you know, you've got to do clean fasting. You can't have, you know, cream in your coffee and that sort of thing. Have you always clean fasted now for a long period, or how's that work for you once you made that switch out again?
I can't say I'm perfect because nobody is, and I occasionally have lapses, and also I fit My lifestyle requires that sometimes I go to parties. I have weekends. My daughter's wedding weekend was, it was great. I had a drink again, and I ate probably more than I had for a long time. But now the difference is I do things in much more moderation, and I can learn when it's right to stop. And I know if I've overdone something, I think, oh, I can't wait to get back to fasting again, doing a clean fast. So I think we all have lapses, but I think the secret is not to beat yourself up about it. Give yourself a bit of space and say, well, look, this is tomorrow's another day. This has happened. Tomorrow's another day, and I shall start my clean fast again, and that's it. Don't give up. And I've spoken to quite a few people who said, oh, it didn't work for me. Didn't work for me. And you can't just give up on it. Just keep going. What else is there, Graham? I say to people, what else is there? You've maybe tried every single diet under the sun, and you might have had some limited success temporarily. Indeed, some people, some diets work for some people. I'm not saying they don't. It's like everything else. But that one size does not fit all. So you need to find a way along your own journey. And again, we talk about the fasting highway, but quite often people head off down the byways and maybe picnic along the way before they get back on that route again to where they want to be. And I think that's the way to look at it. Don't actually feel that you've failed, because you're fasting anyway when you're asleep. Just make it last a little bit longer and realize that it's not always outward signs that you see. Internal stuff is going on that you maybe haven't noticed. And so many people have had so many non-scale victories in terms of their health that weight is, secondary. People are reversing type 2 diabetes. People are actually, doing, having things happen that they wouldn't imagine have happened. I know we've spoken a lot about NSVs before. I mean, I certainly have, and looking at the group, lots of other people have too. So there has to be something in this. You can't just give it up and say that this doesn't work. I don't know, you've probably heard that this week there was some new alleged research study came out linking intermittent fasting to heart problems. I mean, you just need to follow the money, see who funded it, and realize that the study was just nonsense. And then I had a quick look on Twitter, or X as it is now, and saw that Jason Fung had already debunked the entire thing. But these sort of scare stories always give people an excuse not to try it, not to do it because it's dangerous or it's this. And of course, it's not, because there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of us now who have had success with fasting. You just need to go onto your group and see how many people are there who have had that level of success. And, if we don't have a proper study to cite, people will say, oh, this is, but of course the research has been done. Jin has done a lot with her books. Your book is excellent. And Jason Fung, who's another one, I mean, my son had read a lot of his stuff and realized that he had his finger on the pulse. So I don't think we should be scared off by these kind of myths. Same with education, that myth busting is something that I quite like to do, because if you follow who is funding these studies, you often find links back to big corporations who, really are quite invested in selling diets to you. IF is probably quite subversive and dangerous because it's free, it's easy, and we don't need any snake oil salesman telling us, if you buy this from me, it'll work. You can buy the odd book, and you can subscribe to the, podcasts and Patreon communities and things like that. But essentially, it's a very, very free and easy, liberating way of living your life and actually having success with what you want to achieve, whether it's weight loss or health improvement or whatever. So that's my take on it. And I think people need to be aware that there is lots of nonsense out there, and they need to filter through to find the good evidence and the good information.
Yeah, I think so. I was asked to comment on that the other day, and my comment is this: I've got no comment because I don't want to give them the time of day. It doesn't make any sense. And when you see studies that are one-sided, They're also not peer-reviewed. Chuck them in the bin straight away because they're not peer-reviewed. If they're not in the New England Journal of Medicine and so forth, and they're being peer-reviewed by a group of doctors, I don't want to even read them. And that's how I feel about that. All I know is that, we have an obesity pandemic, not an epidemic, a pandemic in the world. And it's getting worse. Now, you talk about people talking about fasting is bad for you, but here's the thing. 7.4 billion people in the world, they all fast. Every single one of them. They go to bed, what do? They're not eating, they're fasting, right? Wake up in the morning, what do? They eat breakfast. How's that spelled? Break fast. They're breaking the fast from the overnight rest. So, we can people say, oh, fasting's bad for you. We'll say, well, you do it. We just do it for a bit longer. Instead of doing it for 8 hours while I'm asleep, I just push it out to 16 or 18 or 20 hours or whatever it may be. But yeah, I mean, then it all comes back to the experiment of one and doing us for us. That's how it works. So, I think we just don't need to give those people the time of day. But, Alison, I know people are going to want to know when you first started and you came back into it again, your eating window. Let's talk about that for a minute. Just your style of eating, has that changed? What was it like before you came into it? And has that evolved?
Well, I suppose I was a bit of a snacker for a long time because I work from home, I have a business, and I do, various bits of sort of writing. So I was in a fairly sedentary role much of the time. So, it's all too easy to snack, working in the kitchen or whatever. So I was a bit lazy, and I think I had to sort of change my mindset into something, you don't need to do this. And, a bag of crisps or something or a bar of chocolate, just too easy to reach for. So once I stopped that, it was actually fairly easy because once you break the habit, I think it really it really does get a great deal easier. So my kind of main protocol is, I've never eaten breakfast, so that wasn't an issue for me. So I usually wait until what would be, a traditional lunchtime, round about one-ish, something like that. I try to get mornings work in, and I feel since I've been fasting that mental clarity is a big sort of big thing for me, a big positive. And what I'll have is a snack type thing around about lunchtime, maybe some crackers and cheese, a bit of fruit. I love things like berries. I have that, nuts, things like that. And then later on, before my window closes, I just have an ordinary meal, whatever I normally have. But certainly I have never been one to eat processed, ultra-processed foods. I mean, you would never catch a ready meal passing my lips, let alone feed it to children. And I think that's part of the problem that we have with our obesity emergency, which it is now. So I'd never do that. I have never liked fizzy drinks, sweet fizzy drinks. I just can't stand them. I drink sparkling water, plain water. And I like Prosecco, which is a bit sparkling, but I do eat pretty decent food. And although I live on my own now, my kids have all left home, I do cook for myself all the time. I always cook from scratch, lots of vegetables, lots of lean meat, good quality food. I just no longer want to put rubbish into my body because it just doesn't make it feel very good. And I know I've heard you and others say this before. So that's what I do, basically.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to be, actually. You strike me as someone that's got a fantastic mindset about all this and a really strong thematic coming through about, lifestyle versus diet here. Let's just circle back to that for a second. And my opinion about diets is this, that diets will work in the short term, right? And most diets will work in the short term if you're calorie restricting. They'll do something. But the problem is they're not sustainable. And that's where they unwind, because people that do crazy things like the cabbage soup diet, well, you can't eat cabbage for the rest of your life, right? And it's just too boring. And then there's other things that people do, some crazy stuff. And then there's a lot of companies that have helped people all around the world and lose weight, and I'm not here to bag them. Some of them have done a great job with people, and some of them have changed their lives, right? But the problem is that when you have to count things every day, you have to weigh things, you have to get points, you have to show up for meetings, you have to pay a subscription every month. It gets tedious, and that's why people drop out of them after a while. Like, there'd be very few people that were 10, 15, 20-year members of some of these weight loss companies, but there are fasters out there that have been doing it. In fact, fasting's been around since time began. Let's face it, religions have been doing fasting for thousands of years. So it's not something that's you, Alison. fasting has been around a long time. So diets, for me, yes, they work short term. But intermittent fasting is very different in that it's sustainable. And once you turn it into a lifestyle, and that's what I think you're really trying to get across, and you've been getting across to your friends, that this is a lifestyle change. And when you change your lifestyle, you change your ways that you eat. You mentioned that you're a perennial snacker. You know, a lot of people were snacking all day. I was. And, you know, eating several times a day and eating some of the wrong things, right? And then when we make that shift to eating what makes me feel my greatest, is what I say, it's really life-changing and it's transformational. And I find that just purely by changing what I was eating in terms of highly processed food, addicted to sugar, fast food, has made all the difference. And I think you'd probably agree with it.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, I would always encourage people to try and cook. I think we have a problem in that the food industry has encouraged people just to sort of pick up anything and shove it in a microwave. I mean, it's easy. I mean, I never fell for the fat-free or the low-fat stuff. I've always had full-fat milk and things, because what do they replace the fat with? Sugar, really. So I've never really fallen for that. But yes, I think we need to do more to educate people about what they're putting inside their bodies. You know, rather than just lose weight, I think you need to actually have, you can't eat anything. And again, going back to education, people say, oh, you know, you can't just let them do what they want. You know, it's the same. But that's not what it's about. It's providing resources so that people can learn to do things for themselves. Now, I would extend my home education journey into trying to educate others that, you know, you find what works for you, find, you know, for your learning style, and do what works for you. And it's the same with fasting. It's not a laissez-faire type thing. You know, I've heard people, oh, you can eat what you want. Well, we've heard this a lot. Eat what you want, just, you know, in this time scale. And we know that that is not as simple as that. People have to actually go through the process of working out what suits their body. And we're all different, as we were saying, an experiment of one. We have to decide what is right to put into our body and to recognize the signs of being full or it not being quite right for us and actually adjusting accordingly. And I think that takes a bit of time. And people are generally, you know, rushing about everywhere and tend to be very impatient and want immediate results. And that's the other thing I would say to people. Don't expect immediate results. I mean, don't, you know, there is not a quick fix. If you have been stuffing the wrong food into your mouth for many, many years, you've developed really bad habits and they take a while to change. And also people start, you know, from different places. Some have underlying medical conditions. So they really need to check with a GP, you know, that it's okay to do fasting or whatever. The good news is that doctors are actually beginning to see that it's a good thing to do. It's a good thing to recommend to patients who are perhaps overweight or perhaps have type 2 diabetes, try and change the diet, change the lifestyle, because that is the only way that it's going to work. But at the moment, I think we have so many pressures to eat and to buy things. And, you know, we need to slow down. You know, the slow food movement, which I'm sure you've heard of, is a great one. You know, sort of cook for yourself. Teach children to cook. You know, that's, schools should be doing that. They used to.
Yeah, I remember doing that at school. I remember burning everything too. And the home economics, yeah, it was called, and they used to try and teach us how to cook things. But, I mean, you actually learned something about it. I mean, by the time I left, I think I could boil eggs, that sort of thing. And, you know, but how I feel about home cooking now is that I can cook a really great meal in 10 or 15 minutes. The time it would take me to drive down to a drive-thru, order it, pick it up, drive back again, I can prepare a really great meal. And I think for me, it's about having those ingredients on hand to make those things, right? In your freezer, in your pantry, having the stuff on hand versus having the poor quality food in your pantry, in your fridge, in your freezer.
Yeah.
And some thought has to go into it as well, I think, with food choices. And, you know, something's not serving you and you're sitting there wondering why you're not losing weight or why intermittent fasting is hard for you, there's two places to look. There's the fast. Are you clean fasting, number one? And then there's the feasting period. What is it that's holding you back? And there may be a trigger food that you don't know. You mentioned that you cut out the red wine for a while, right? And you all of a sudden you started feeling better. you started seeing results that you wanted to see, all by doing one thing. Because obviously red wine, you have a couple, next thing you get snacky, you get the snacks out, you get the chips, and, you know, and away you go. It's a vicious cycle, right?
It is indeed. And I think, you know, I feel quite lucky to have lots of good ingredients on my doorstep. I live in a nice part of Scotland. We have Aberdeen Angus beef, and I am a carnivore. We have, you know, some of the greatest berry sort of fields in the world in Tayside, where I live. It's good to have that. And I recognise that not all people do. And I also think, you know, having a very busy lifestyle, having to feed young children, that has an effect on how you feel about fasting and how you have to organise your life to make sure that you're not just going to eat with the kids every time they eat, and find a way through that. And lots of people don't want to give the wrong messages to their children about not eating, but it's more difficult for some people than others, I think, depending on circumstances. And also these underlying medical conditions. I had a friend who started fasting, and she she was totally committed to it and did it for weeks and weeks and weeks, if not months, and was just not getting anywhere. She went and had tests, and she had Hashimoto's. So that kind of, you know, explained why she was having problems. But some people who have young children who are maybe have very busy lifestyles, rushing about, going to work and things, I think maybe, you know, good planning is probably going to help you a lot by, you know, making up your lunch the night before or something, and a healthy lunch, so that you're not out buying stuff and getting coffees, you know, that are just full of empty calories, basically, with all that cream in them. So I think maybe some people have to be a bit more organized than others. I know when I was younger, I had to be, because I was so busy all the time with children and sorting out meals for everybody. But the secret is, you do not have to have, you know, six meals a day and lots of snacks in between. It's just so utterly unhealthy. And I don't think it's a bad lesson to teach children that, you know, eat at certain times a day, and you don't need to eat massive amounts. You know, give them a really good balanced diet and let you yourself be a role model for them. I think it's very, very important to do that, because more and more children are becoming obese and having, you know, lots of conditions that we certainly didn't have in the 1950s when I was growing up, when we were always out running about and things. Lack of activity is another thing, of course, and exercise can play a part, along with fasting, to help with that mindset and to help with the mental clarity. And I know that I've certainly benefited from that.
Yeah. I know in your bio, you mentioned there as the educator, and caught my eye that you meant the Queen, right? I remember as a yes. child in Auckland, New Zealand, and we all got taken on army trucks to go and see the Queen. And we got there and got off these army trucks, and that was the biggest thrill of all, right? Going in the army trucks. There's about 100 of us squeezed in each army truck, no seatbelts, no nothing those days. You know how it rolled. Jumped out. And there was the Queen and Prince Philip. I think that's his name, Prince Philip. Yeah. And yes, I remember her car drove right past me, and I was like 2 feet away from her. And I wasn't lucky enough to meet her like you were. But your work is obviously very important to you as an educator as well there in Scotland. I know you do some great things. So just tell us about that, just to give us a background of what you actually do.
Well, I actually run the Scottish Home Education Forum, which is the national support network for home educators in Scotland. I started educating my own children in the 90s. And, you know, we just never really went back to it. They're now in their 30s. One, in fact, is going to be 40 in October. Ooh, shriek. So I always did that. And I quite early on, I became an advocate for other parents and sort of ended up doing lots of voluntary work, which I still do. It's a role from which you never retire, because it's like the next lotter coming up. So you give them a bit of, it's like fasting, really. You know, you sort of try and motivate other people and, you know, help them out if they're having difficulties or whatever. So I do that, and I really do enjoy that. So we have a really good network of home educators in Scotland. Yeah, I mean, I get involved quite often in campaigns, because policies change all the time. So talk to government and try and sort of make sure that policies don't impact negatively on our community, because so many of the children who are home educated, and I think you know, across the UK have some sort of additional support need. There are many children on the autistic spectrum or who have disabilities of some sort. So there's a lot going on that you know, perhaps people don't understand about the home education community. So we're often treated as you know, something a bit odd, a bit like FASTAs, really. So I see it, you know, it's important for me to actually educate people and make them realise that, you know, we're just ordinary families like them. There are far more people doing it now. And I know there's a big community in Australia, New Zealand too. It's important that people understand that we're just the same. We've just made slightly different choices in terms of educating our kids. And that's basically it. So I've done that for many years. I mean, since the 90s. And I also do a bit of consultancy work for a lawyer. I do some sort of education consultancy when parents are going to tribunal to try and get their children the support that they need. And in my spare time, I have a full-time business selling vintage and pre-loved clothing online, which I've done for many years since I was made redundant from working for the Scottish Parliament.
Yeah, that must be fun with the clothing side of things. I mean, obviously losing that amount of weight as well with vintage clothing, of course. You must have found all these gems and getting them out and trying them on. And I saw the photo of you at the wedding and that. You look fantastic.
That was one of the great non-scale victories, being able to fit into vintage clothes, because I don't know if being the male of the species you realise, but vanity sizing is a big thing. So sizes in the 70s, the 60s, 70s and 80s were quite different from the ones we have today. So, you know, you can put a size up. So a size 12 in the 70s would be around about a size 8 now in UK sizing. So things have changed a bit as people have definitely got bigger, but the sizes have kind of stayed the same to make them feel better about themselves, I think. But vintage clothing is generally much smaller. So it was a great joy to fit into things I wore in the 70s. And I think I told you when I sent you the bio that meeting the Queen, I wore a vintage dress then. Before vintage was fashionable, I wore a dress from the 1940s then. And just last year I tried it on again and it fits, which was a real surprise actually, but a pleasant one. So it's a great business to be in. I really love it. I meet lots of people who have the same passion, and we just enjoy also being part of the circular economy, because it's sustainable fashion. It's slow fashion movement. I'm really, really into that, and I always have been.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to start sounding like a weirdo on these podcasts because I always mention it because I'm looking at you, right? And I'm thinking, here's a woman that's 66 and you don't look anything like 66. You're aging backwards with this. And obviously in your job that you do in the education sort of world, then the mental clarity required for that is a lot. Do you think intermittent fasting is giving you that extra energy and extra boost and that clarity to be able to deal with all these things that you do?
I think it definitely has. I think I mentioned before, usually in the mornings, because I've only had black coffee or water, I occasionally go to the gym or whatever. But I kind of feel that that's my time to be sort of very, very mentally astute. And I often sort of make notes to myself for what I'm going to do the rest of the day. But that mental clarity is one of the NSVs I have really, really noticed. And, you know, there's no way I had the same level of kind of, you know, being switched on that I have now before I was fasting. I think it's a really great thing. And lots of people I've spoken to have said the same thing. I do think exercise helps as well, because I do a bit of that. I go to the gym 3 times a week. And as I told you, I do flexibility training. And although I did get back into my splits at 66, I've kind of given it a bit of a break because my hamstrings and my hip flexors are not what they were, so they're complaining a bit. But I still do a lot of cardio and a lot of strength training because I think that really does help retain muscle, which we really need to do as we get older. I mean, it's good to see these things as a direct result of fasting. And talking about NSVs, you know, certainly one of the main ones for me was I had a very, very nasty burn scar on my calf that was there for ages. I mean, and I thought, well, it's never going to go away. It was like a chunk out of my calf. It was really bad. It was an accident with a with scalding water. And within 6 months, it had gone. Literally, there's nothing there now. It had completely gone. I also trapped this finger in a drawer. And it was really, I mean, it's still a bit bumpy, but, it, you know, the nail was really, really damaged. But it's grown back. It's absolutely fine now. You know, it's just amazing, these things that happen. I've already mentioned the vintage clothes. That's a great sort of feel-good factor. But loads of these things, and other people are saying the same thing. Skin improves, hair improves, nails improve. And I think it's the, you know, the inflammation goes down. So you actually see it. You see that happening to your skin. It does definitely improve. I mean, I'll be 67 in September, and I don't feel 67, but you know, you don't, you just have to sort of be as young as you feel, and age is just a number. But I do think, you know, we have to look after ourselves, particularly at this stage of our life, and, you know, take it as it comes. And that's why I do the strength training, the resistance training, and feel much, much better for it. But I feel stronger now than I did probably 10 or 15 years ago. But I don't know how things are going to go in the future, but I'm hoping that you know, I will continue to age relatively well. And people do say to me that I don't look my age, which is very nice. It's very kind of them. I kind of feel my age sometimes, but you know, generally I have a lot more energy than I used to have.
I agree 100%. And I think as we age, our whys change, don't they? For me, it's about longevity. You know, I want to be around for my wife. I want to be around for my family. I want to be around to see grandchildren. I want to be able to play with those grandchildren. I want to go and watch them play sport. I want to travel with them. I want to do all of those things. And I love travel, as you may have seen. And, you know, I've been traveling a lot in my life, and both as an obese man and as a fit and healthy man. And being a fit and healthy man, traveling is a whole lot better. I remember last time I was in Scotland, I was an obese guy. But I enjoyed all the things in Scotland, as you do. But, you know, it just opens up a whole new world, doesn't it? And I think aging is really important to dig into those other whys about longevity. And what I mentioned about, you obviously are looking forward to grandchildren. I don't know if you have any already, but it's something that I really think about.
I have one grandchild. I wasn't sure I was going to have any, but my daughter who was married had a little boy last year. So he is very sweet. He's about 7 months old now, and just the cutest little button. He lives in Glasgow, so it's about 2 hours away, but it's terrific to have that. And I have what I call, my other daughter has a dog, so I'm a granny to a Labrador as well, which is nice. So it's lovely to actually have that new phase in my life, and actually have that to look forward to, him growing up. And we're quite a close family, obviously, since we lost my husband. I mean, more than 10 years ago now. It doesn't seem like it, but it's more than 10 years ago. But I kind of feel it's my responsibility to live life for him as well, and you know, just keep on going and do things. And I've actually had to do certain things, because we were very much a team. I think, like you and you, Lou, we're very much a team. We complemented each other. We did different things. We had kind of different roles. So I had to learn to do all sorts of things, like organize tradespeople to do the house renovations that I've had, and you know, learn about things to do with electricity and plumbing and all sorts of things that I never would have had to do. And it was a big thing for me, because, you know, it's just something I used to leave to him. And I've actually had to learn to stand on my own two feet, because I can't always be running to my son every time something goes wrong, because he has a very responsible job and he can't just sort of drop everything. So I like to make sure that I stay independent, look after myself, and have a great network of friends, and we kind of rely on each other. So yeah, it's life is good.
I think that's a great why too, isn't it? Keeping ourselves in good nick and being healthy and strong boned and everything else, because we don't want to be burdens on our family when we get older, in our 70s and 80s. We want to be able to look after ourselves. We want to be independent. And that's the last thing we want, is, you know, our family having to look after us. And I really think about that too. And, you know, and I think, man, if I was still a 350-pound guy at 75, it would be very difficult. I'd be in some mobility machine and scooter or something, and my family would be able to pick me up off the floor. And there's so many whys, I think, as we get older. And I think when I tell people about intermittent fasting, but I just wanted to circle back too while I think about it, that scar you mentioned, I've interviewed so many people that have had that happen. I had one guy, Justin Claypool. He was in a bad motor accident. Same thing, fire, scarring from the accident, really thick, deep set. I was seeing pictures of it, really thick scarring. And after about a year, the scarring almost vanished off his body, and his doctors were like, whoa, what has gone on here? You know, and I've seen it, the psoriasis, you know, vanish off my body, ugly psoriasis all over me, my hands, my knuckles, back of my knees, everywhere. And it just went, just disappeared. Now my skin's clear and I don't have any of that stuff. So there has to be something in the fasting process, doesn't there? We know the science, the cellular repair that's going on, that rest from digestion that we're giving our organs, rejuvenating our body every single day. And I describe it as going through a car wash every day where your body's getting scrubbed internally, right? And you come out the other side and you feel fresh, you feel clean, you feel great. And then you go to bed and you wake up, you're full of energy. And it's just so fantastic. But, you know, if we could bottle intermittent fasting and sell it, we probably could. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's a lifestyle that we live. And I think you've done it fabulously. But if you're sitting around there in Scotland in a cafe and some of the lovely places that you have there, and some of your friends said, you know what, Alison, we want to give this a go. What sort of words of wisdom would you give them to get going and some advice?
Well, as everyone else has said, the clean fast, start as you mean to go on, do that. Also give it time, give it, you know, weeks, certainly a couple of months, you know, just don't expect miraculous results, but do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it because it's for you, and find a way that suits your individual lifestyle, you know, the protocol that suits you. Not everybody likes black coffee. Well, you don't need to drink black coffee. You can drink water or whatever, or drink white coffee in your window. Don't fall for the, oh, I read on a group somewhere that zero cal Coke is all right. No, it's not. Stick to the proper information, the good, you know, evidenced websites and groups like yours, like Gins and books. You know, read as much as you can, listen to podcasts. I find the podcasts have been absolutely brilliant, all the stories. I find them great. I listen to at least one every session I do in the gym. Do that. Surround yourself by people who are positive about your choice. Just don't listen to the naysayers. Just, you know, put them aside. Find the right information and just do it. Just start. And if you have bumps along the way, just tomorrow's another day, start again. Don't be put off. As I was saying, there's plenty of opportunity to nip down a side alley, you know, for a little while, and then just get back on that fasting highway to get to your outcome. So clean fast, definitely good information, good people around you who are not going to sort of, you know, naysay your choices. I think that's really all I can say. Just don't, and never give up. It's the only thing that's there that's free. It doesn't cost you anything. So there is absolutely no harm in continuing, no matter what. If you have these odd days where things don't go right, you know, it doesn't really matter in the great scheme of things, as long as you don't allow that to continue and just say, oh, that's it, can't do it, I've had a bad day. No, everybody has bad days. So just start again the next day as you mean to go on, clean fast and feel better.
Great advice. Give yourself grace. Start again the next day. Clean slate, you day. That's what I say to people. And I can't thank you enough for coming onto the podcast today. And it comes to mind, and I think you might be the first person from Scotland to be on this podcast, by the way. I could be wrong about that, but I think you are. But I'd love to talk to you in another 6 to 12 months to see where you are then and how you're going with this, because I can see you doing great things for people with intermittent fasting and using those skills that you have as an educator. So it'll be interesting to see where you are in another 6 to 12 months. But Alison, thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Well, thank you, Graham. It's been lovely to be here. And I'd love to come back and talk to you again. Thank you.
Look forward to it. Okay, take care. Bye. Oh, thank you so much, Alison. Thoroughly enjoyed your story and I can't wait to follow you up in 6 to 12 months' time.
What an amazing story you have, and I think that was fantastic, and thank you for sharing it with us all the way there from the northeast of Scotland. And I know that you've just motivated many, many people right around the world. Okay, folks, as heard at the top of the show, come and join us in our Patreon members community. It's been fantastic. What do you get in return? Well, you get quite a lot, actually. We have 2 Zoom accountability meetings each month. There's also a Breaking Free from Sugar meeting each month. There's bonus podcasts, discussion topics, 5-minute focuses, and audios every week to keep you motivated and stay focused with your intermittent fasting journey and give you that extra layer of accountability. You can go to that link in the show notes there at www.patreon.com/thefastinghighway. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.